Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 411 for comics originally released on June 24th, 2015. Now, starting us off in DC is Superman number 41. Now, this is the start of the Truth storyline. It's before Truth number 1. It's labeled Truth at the beginning. It's something that is taking place before Action Comics, Batman and Superman, Superman and Wonder Woman, and just about everything else going on in Superman's life. So, to tell you the truth, from my perspective, I'm a little annoyed they waited to release this in the last week of the month versus, you know, doing the other stuff first, because it makes everything, it kind of jumbles the timeline, and that kind of annoys me. What are your thoughts on that aspect of this?
Thankfully, I didn't read any of those other books, So this was fresh for me.
Okay.
Even though it was out of order for folks that are reading a lot of the other DC books, since I wasn't, it was a fresh take and brand new.
So you didn't have any expectations about Superman's new status quo and how it got to there?
No.
Nope. All right. So you probably enjoyed this a lot more than I did then.
I did. I really liked it. Yeah, I thought it was cool and very engaging. I really liked the supporting cast. I thought they were strong as they've ever been in a Superman title that I've read in recent years. I liked his portrayal, like the portrayal of both him in action and in as Clark Kent. I thought that was great. I like the John Romita art in this, and I know some people can take or leave it, but I thought it was pretty good. And yeah, I really thought this was a good take on Superman, and a refreshing take on Superman that I haven't felt for a while.
Starting with the art from Romita, he's doing a great job. He never does a horrible job. But I really don't think this is his best work. I kind of think, you know, I'd be hard-pressed to say what I think his best work really was. I'd go towards, in recent years, his early work on Amazing Spider-Man. I mean, he's never bad. He's doing a great job here. But his style has either gotten a little bit more pronounced or a little blockier. I don't know. There's something about it that, from my perspective, he's not at his peak. But again, he's still just incredibly talented in doing a really good job here. The use of the supporting cast, particularly Lois and Jimmy, this is some of the best spotlighting they've gotten, like you said, in a while. But there's also aspects of this that just seem a little ridiculous. I mean, Superman is really risking Jimmy's life in a fairly needless way, and is acting a little irresponsible. And Lois is just, you know, horning in on their story and being a little kind of aggressive or forceful or whatnot there in a way that seemed a little out of character from how we've been seeing her in the New 52. But, I mean, we haven't frankly seen enough of her in the New 52 from my perspective. I mean, she was introduced, she's got a boyfriend, and then he just kind of vanishes. So I guess seeing the supporting cast at all, particularly featured the way they are, nice change of pace.
Yeah, I think it helps, because it seems like so many writers struggle with telling Superman stories, and I think, yeah, I do agree. Yeah, now you point that out. Yeah, why did poor little Jimmy? He could have died pretty easily in this episode or this issue. And but yeah, I thought having them interact really works, and it really works well, and he doesn't seem so alien like in this, and he's definitely not as superpowered as he once was, which I think I saw an issue or two where that was happening or had happened or was getting ready to happen or something, but I haven't seen all of those to his depowering. I haven't seen read all those books, so this was kind of just, it was easy to follow, though. I had no problem with it, and I thought this was a pretty good, you know, issue with a beginning, middle, and end, and I just liked the way it was put together, and it was engaging for me. And, you know, just taking the natural progression of 3D printing technology to the a little ludicrous level, but still, it worked for me to move the story along. And there's, I like the B plot with the politician and the conspiracy angle. I thought that was cool. Looks like that'll play out later, maybe. And yeah, there's some good stuff in here, and I really like the way they composed this issue enough for me to stick on this book and read another.
Oh, that's good to hear. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that went right here, and the amount of story they told, the way they presented it, by and large, was really good. There were a few things that I think are fairly easy to mock about this issue. Right after we get the little solar flare kind of thing that they've been trying to establish as a new power for him, I think it actually decreases his IQ, because we see a page where he's not being all that good about protecting his secret identity, and you know, Lois is in the room and stuff, and I'm like, I get it depowers him a little, but that just seemed reckless. And this whole story is setting up her unmasking him. And kind of how I felt about this is kind of like how I'm feeling about a lot of or at least many of the post-convergence titles. I think they're doing a well-told story and an entertaining story, but one that I kind of question if it's the best move to be telling that story. Because, again, the end game here, as revealed by the other Superman titles, is the genie's out of the bottle, everybody knows Clark Kent is Superman. So after this, going back to the whole nobody knows Clark Kent is Superman stuff, if they choose to, that's going to be a little problematic. But they're telling a believable thing, getting it towards that thing, the whole riff of, you know, how could you be fooled by that simple of a disguise, you know, when Clark and Jimmy are like, who is this guy? I mean, they're setting some seeds, they're trying to play fair, they're telling a story well. It's just, why are they going in this direction is the question I've got. You know, I think Gene Yang is doing a solid job on the writing. It's just, long-term, this seems to be setting them painting themselves into a bit of a corner if they're not careful.
Well, that's very likely possible. I'm not sure. He's well-regarded as a creator, and so I'm going to give him a little bit of rope on that and let's see where this goes. I'm curious to see what the character that was introduced in the second half of the story, what she has to say and what the deal is. That's another good thing about this first issue was not only did it tell a nice story with a beginning, middle, and end, it also had a nice B plot, a nice solid B plot that propels me into the next issue, which is, really good. And it's what we clamor for in comics and, single issue writing. And I kind of applaud that. So all that being said, I really like this and to give it a B plus.
Cool. For me, I'm going with just a B. I think it was good, but I'll be honest, I was expecting a little bit more out of this than we got. But part of that is because of what else I've been reading about Superman. I was expecting to get more about how his status quo in those other things came to be, and it looks like we're going to need the entire story arc for that. And that's not unreasonable. But when I read, you know, when I see the cover of this and it says Truth, and I'm like, oh, well, you know, that's where we're at in the other stuff, and this is before Truth and a prequel to it, it's like I'm a little confused, a little frustrated. But while that's the case, really good art, really good story, I think a good return on the investment for this in terms of the amount of story we get and the quality of it.
And I'm sure DC's not happy with it either. I'm going to assume, make a leap, and say that the art wasn't ready. And if the art's not ready, you can hold up three or four other books and wait on the art and lose that revenue, or you can just put it out.
Why do you say that? Do you think this was not the story they were originally going to do? Or I'm confused.
I'm saying the art was probably late. I'm guessing the art was late on Superman, and that's why it didn't come out first.
No, I think it was scheduled to come out now.
Well, that's just dumb, then.
That's my point.
Yeah.
That's my confusion.
I just assumed that it was an art delay.
I do not believe so. I'm looking for a file really quick to see if I've got the... Somewhere around here, I've got...
The original solicit date?
The checklist or whatever for the post-convergence stuff. And I clearly just have too damn many files because I can't find it. Let me check one more place. Yeah, I'm not sure where I put it. I put it somewhere safe, no doubt. But yeah, this was when it was scheduled to come out. I do not believe it was late. I mean, I could be wrong about that, but
I'll see if I still have the original previews and see when it was, what week it was solicited for.
Well, and again, somewhere they've been doing, and I thought I'd found a copy of it online, but a checklist for everything that was coming out. And I'm, like I said, I'm pretty sure this is out on time. Yeah, I don't know where I put that. That's a bummer. Anyways. So yeah, I think it's just a little silly that, they kind of intentionally did some of these things out of order.
I wouldn't think it would be intentional. I think it's stupidity, maybe?
I don't know.
Ineptitude? Cause that's, there's no way they wouldn't. I mean, yeah, like you obviously, it needs to be the first thing. I don't know. It's silly. That's just silly.
That's at the end of the day what it comes down to. The way they're doing it, and it's not new. They've done this before with a lot of the new 52 stuff originally. It's like, yeah, check this out. It comes out in 3 weeks or something. And I just don't understand the mindset of that, but it does seem to be very much intentional. So, shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is E for Extinction number 1. This is, of course, part of Secret Wars, because, you know, everything's part of Secret Wars these days. It is written by Chris Burham, and artist is Ramon Villalobos, and hopefully I didn't get that too bad. How long have you been reading X-Men? How familiar are you with the X-Men?
Oh, I'm sporadic.
Okay.
Off and on, yeah.
Did you read the Morrison run of the new X-Men?
No.
Okay. Were I to have titled this, I might have gone with A's for another X title, because there seems to be a lot of them, particularly now with Secret Wars. But I was disappointed when this issue starts with a fairly text-light opening page giving the basic gist of Secret Wars, but no previously in, because I don't recall the status quo of the X-Men that this was picking up from. I did a little research, and it's picking up from the E's for Extinction storyline, gee, go figure. But that was from New X-Men number 114 to 116 in the middle of 2001. So
I have those.
But that was like 14, 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So previously in X-Men really would have helped me. As it was, I was able to kind of hit the ground running and go with this, figure out what was going on, because they did a fairly good job of reestablishing stuff. I mean, they cover a lot of ground in this issue, and it sets the scene for here, because it's not picking up at the end of that E for Extinction. It's like the story took a left turn instead of a right turn, and this is a couple of years later, or X years
later. A lot of years later, it seems like, from the age of some of these characters, right?
10, 15, maybe 20, I don't know, maybe it's happening real time, so it's 15, 14. But a lot of the characters we're getting here are ones that were featured and introduced in the new X-Men. Quentin Quire, Beak, Dust, those characters, a lot of which have been featured in titles since then, in titles like, you know, Wolverine and the X-Men, Spider-Man and the X-Men, and other of the more, quote-unquote, junior X-Men books. So it was fun seeing these characters, and again, older versions of, you know, Cyclops, the White Queen, etc., and the Magneto. But I'm curious what the mindset was that said, let's take something from, you know, what feels like an almost arbitrary storyline from the X-Men from that point and doing a miniseries or an ongoing series or whatever this is based on it.
Yeah, I had no idea this was a springboard from that series. I assumed it was something from Marvel's past, but I didn't know, nor did I do any research to find out. I mean, I recognize most of the characters and just understood that, yeah, they're much older versions of those characters. And for the most part, the story was accessible and it was all right. The art's very stylized, and I think it's probably a take it or leave it type of art style that you either dig or you don't dig. And it is kind of like Chris Burnham's art, I thought. It reminded me a lot of his art, and he's not doing the art, he's doing the writing. So, but it felt kind of reminiscent of that style, and it was okay. It wasn't a bad book.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad book, but there's so many X books in the Battle World stuff, and you know, I'm not crazy about the art style, so that put me off a little. But I was impressed with the amount of story. But by the time the thing kind of rolled around to the end, I mean, it covered a lot of ground. I'd gotten back into the where this is at, just based on this issue, not any recollection of previous stuff. And, you know, again, I would have liked a little more information to give me some context of where these characters were coming from. And I question if it was as accessible as it could have been. But at the end of the thing, while I liked it, it's hard to care too much about these X-Men, these characters, since there's uncounted numbers of other versions of these characters elsewhere on Battleworld right now. I mean, we've been reading about similar ones of these in some past weeks. I guess we haven't. I guess I've been reading them in other titles that we haven't reviewed on here. But the Inferno one has some of these characters, you know, Cyclops, etc., as does, you know, Years of Future Past and, you know, all the other X-Book-related stuff. So how can I get too invested in these characters when, you know, there's more titles than I can shake a stick at featuring variations on these guys?
Well, I mean, that's what we did for Convergence. No, there were,
and did we 40... care about those stories either?
No, we did not. No, we did not.
I mean, I'll admit, there are some of the Secret Wars books that are really working for me. Squadron Supreme, Squadron Sinister, actually, last week was a good example of that. But they tend to be ones that don't have the same characters bouncing all over, you know, in multiple books. And they tend just to be better written, whereas Convergence, we've beaten that to a pulp a few times. But I think it was just bland. So, Marvel has enough character, they could have done the 40 bazillion titles featuring, you know, like the Defenders, the Champions, I don't know, maybe even the Fantastic Four or something. But they chose to limit the field and be very heavy on the X-Books, which I don't think was particularly advantageous for them.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I liked this, but it's a little hard to get too emotionally invested, given that at the end of all of this, I don't know how much of this is going to matter to any of the characters whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was bad. I won't be reading the next issue, but it's still an above average book, so I gave it a C+.
Okay. I went with a B-. Again, for me, the big thing was just the amount of story they covered. Get me back up to speed on a continuity and a storyline based on something from 14 years ago, that's pretty impressive. I did, by the way, find that file I was looking for, the checklist. And Superman 41 was indeed scheduled to come out on June 24th. Boggles the mind.
Boggles the mind.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is Mulan Revelations, number one from Dark Horse. The creative team is Mark Andreyko doing the writing and Micah Kaneshiro on art and cover. One thing I want to comment about the art, before we get too much into the story, is there is a Ryan Jorgensen listed at the bottom of the inside front cover as digital art technician, which is not a credit I see often or can recall having seen before. But if you go to the second page and then the fourth page in particular, you've got some characters that are kind of like ghosted out.
Yeah.
It's a really cool effect. And I'm wondering if that was kind of that digital art technician, Ryan, you know, coming into play and helping facilitate that, taking what was just a layer of the pencils, the inks, and then working the digital magic there. If so, I mean, hey, whoever's to get credit for that, both in terms of the line work, which is awesome, but also the digital effect there, I really enjoyed that. I thought it was really cool. So they did a good job. This is the first issue of a 4-issue miniseries, and the story kind of breaks into two parts. We've got something set in the nebulous past, and then something set in 2125 in Shanghai. Both feature a character called Mulan. I'll be honest, I'm a little unclear if it was the same Mulan in the two or not, and what's going on there. I'm guessing they're different characters, but I felt that aspect of the storytelling could have been a little clearer. When I got to the end of this, I double-checked that, yeah, it is just a 4-issue miniseries. And while I would have liked more story here, I'm willing to give them a little bit of latitude, figuring at the end of the 4 issues, it will have a beginning, a middle, and an end of that. So expecting 4 little kind of micro beginning, middle, end type things in addition, that can really kind of mess up the pacing of a four-issue arc. And to me, it's different for it to be something that you're serializing out and would be the equivalent of, say, a movie versus an arc in an ongoing comic book series.
I thought this was one of those comics that was a tale of two halves for me again. I thought it took forever to get going. I didn't like the first half at all. Once we got into the futuristic setting and met that Mulan character, I liked her a lot better. That was a good interaction between her and her brother. You kind of got some show don't tell backstory with them. There's some interesting things going on in the society with some disease and her bloodlines that are part of this, and her, I guess, actual blood, which is an important part of this story going forward and interesting. So that kind of brought me in. And then there's the mentor character that's like an uncle or something that's going to help her explain to her exactly what's going on, that they've been holding the secret from her. And that was all interesting. I really liked the second half, but I really didn't like the first half. And I'm not sure what they're going to do in the next couple of issues. It's going to be more, if that's all we're going to, that back stuff was just a one-time thing, or we're going to revisit that maybe at the end. I'm not sure exactly.
My expectation on that is, say this were a movie. You've got the beginning thing, you do the opening credits, then you go to the future stuff. And that's where the main story kind of starts and takes place. But I think you need that stuff we had at the beginning of that earlier past story, that past Mulan, to kind of set up the bloodline, to set up some stuff that will pay off later. Because what I'm sensing with the second half of this issue, and we don't have enough to go on, I could be wildly mistaken on this, but it feels a bit like kind of the classic hero's journey with, okay, let's set up the character. They're a little bit reluctant. They meet the mentor. They're going to go to the magical place. All that kind of stuff is happening. But we're just getting into that kind of turning point where they get introduced to the more exotic world beyond what they were familiar with when this issue ends.
We spent an awful lot of time in the beginning, the first half of the book, to establish that she's from this bloodline, though. I mean, I think we could have cut that in half and spent a little more time at the interesting stuff.
It was 8 pages, so...
Really? Was that it? Man, it really felt longer.
So they packed so much story into those 8 pages. I know what you mean, though, because I hit the end of this thinking that, again, I wanted more. I felt like I needed a little bit more. If this had been an ongoing series, I don't know that I would continue with it. But I liked it, both in terms of some of the art stuff they did at that opening sequence. And, I mean, to me, the art was good, the standout thing in the opening thing, and then the later half, it was more the story. The art was still good, don't get me wrong. But it seemed to lean... I seemed to click more with the story in the second half than in the first half, and more with the art in the first half than the second half, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's not like there's radical differences between the story and art between the two halves. It's just there's that good dividing line where we jump forward a few centuries, a few millennium, or whatever, to kind of split the book. So I'm curious how things play out in the next stuff. And again, I'm enjoying it. They told some good stuff. They enticed me to keep going with this, but they didn't sell me on it in so much as... It's not like I've got to get the next issue, but it's like, yeah, I'm curious. I think I will get the next issue.
Yeah, this is one of those cases where for you, having solicited as a miniseries is going to help them.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you would have dumped it, most likely.
Or at least not continued with it. I don't know that I would have. It's one of those that I need to see if I have it on order. I like it enough. If I don't, I will put it on order. But I didn't. It wasn't one of those things that if I'd had it on order that it's like, oh, well, you know, it's ongoing, forget it. I would have written it out either way, I think.
Oh, okay. I won't be going on to issue two. There is some good stuff in here, and it might resonate a little bit more with someone else. I don't have a good luck with Mark Andreyko books either. I don't usually like any of his things. So I don't have a lot of hope that it would turn a corner and really grab me in the next issue anyway. So since it's not really that engaging, not enough to propel me forward, I won't be moving on. And this one was a C for me, just average.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, for me, it was a B. It was above average. Again, there was aspects of the art that really clicked with me. They did some world building. They got me kind of set up in two time frames and status quos. And it felt like it covered a lot of ground, but I go back to it didn't feel like it covered quite enough ground. And I'm kind of wondering if they tightened up either the first section or even some of the second section, if they'd gotten the story a little bit further than the turning point it ends on, or that plot point it ends on, I should say, if that would have been enough for both of us to come out of thinking, wow, this was really good. Yeah. I get where they're going. I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah, I know why. I mean, it makes sense that they would stop it there. I mean, that'd be where you'd go to commercial with being surrounded. So it makes sense. But yeah, there could have just been a little bit more after that.
Exactly.
That might have done it. Might have turned the corner.
But not knowing what they've got up next, there might not have been a good pausing point for a little bit. So it kind of explains why they stopped where they did.
Yeah.
So like I said, for me, it's a B. It's good stuff. I think it. In this day and age, though, with the competitive market, it needed to be better stuff, and I think a little bit tighter editing or a little bit more work or something, or maybe just more page count for this, might have helped them out. Now, we are at the end of June here, and again, we've had a lot of new things coming out from DC. I thought we might take a few minutes and just kind of, you know, go through those at a high level, not a full-on review of any of these things, but just kind of
sure.
Gut feeling, you know. One, how many of these have you been reading? And then how have they been working for you?
Up to this week, I have read them all. I read all the new number ones.
Okay.
And it's been a mixed bag, up and down. I've had some real surprises that I've been pleasantly surprised for and really excited about going forward. And then some that were not so good. So, you know, I thought, like, the June 3rd titles, the standout for me was Midnighter. I thought that was my favorite one of those. I don't know if you want to go week by week or...
Yeah, let's go. I was going to go off about a couple of week by weeks just as well.
Okay.
Didn't like
Batmite as well. Batman Beyond was kind of average. Bizarro I hated. And Omega Man was kind of just average for me.
Bizarro Man, I don't know... is this in continuity? Is it out of continuity, or is it just flat out doomed? I don't know what they were thinking with that one. It was too cartoony for me. It's not on Bizarro World. It's kind of set in maybe the real DC, maybe not. I was puzzled, and not in a wow, this is fun kind of a way. Whereas Batmite, I have no clue if it's in continuity or not, but it was much more fun and enjoyable than I expected. And it reminded me of the 1977 kind of New Adventures of Batman Saturday morning cartoon by Filmation, which Batmite was in. And it had a sense of fun to it that I liked.
Yeah.
That Bizarro, for me, didn't have.
Yeah, I can see that. The humor didn't connect with me as well. In places it did, but in other places I just kind of rolled my eyes. So yeah, it was a hit or miss.
Batman Beyond, though, man, it's 2 months after Future's End. I really don't recall how things ended for Terry and Tim and all that stuff from that. And while they're giving a decent intro to this time period, it's hard for me to really connect and care about it.
Yeah.
We've got one character out of time, then sent further out of time, and both are kind of quasi out of continuity. There's some parts I'm liking, the Alfred operating system, and you know, again, I like Tim Drake, so it's fun to see him as the lead, but I don't see a long-term future for that title, no pun intended.
Right, yeah. That's probably par for the course for a lot of these.
I mean, Midnighter was fun, and I would say that was one of the best from that week. Again, the Justice League stuff, I enjoyed that too. How about June 10th? What about that week for you?
That was tough. I liked Red Hood and Arsenal. I liked them better without Starfire in the mix. I think it works better with just the two of them and their dynamic going back and forth. I think their chemistry's would agree better. With that.
I think it's a classic kind of buddy action adventure movie just with red body armor.
I was surprised that I liked Earth 2 Society because it was a weekly that I hadn't read leading up to that. And so I thought I'd be lost, but I really kind of enjoyed the whole here's what happens next stuff, and here's how we get to the planet, and what happened with those ships and things. I thought that was kind of cool.
I
enjoyed it.
That one's stretching credibility for me. I mean, we're getting how they're getting set up on this world. There's the whole they're having cities. I mean, they go from it's a clean world to the ships come back to they've got cities, they've got problems, and it's just, wow, that was an eventful year. And with what they had set up in the sneak peek of the binary star system, with what they're doing with Jimmy Olsen, it's like there's a lot of stuff that could be very cool in it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not. It doesn't feel like they thought it through very well.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my frustration there.
I was surprised at Starfire. It just feels like a Harley Quinn book, you know, without Harley Quinn in it.
Yeah, and it's very much the New 52, no surprise, Starfire, than the New Teen Titans Starfire.
Yeah, and I don't know if I need any more Harley Quinn, so that's a tough one. The Constantine, I found him unrecognizable based on the previous incarnations and even the television show version of Constantine.
I still haven't gotten around to watching the TV show, so can't talk to that. He did seem like a darker version than we'd been getting in Justice League Dark and Constantine, but not as dark as Hellblazer. I could not speak to what happened in Constantine, in Hellblazer. I read the New 52 Constantine, but of Hellblazer, I read, I think, issues 9, 10, and 300. So I really couldn't tell you what all happened there. Most of my knowledge is from Swamp Thing.
And Section 8, I never read the Hitman Garth Ennis stuff, so I was lost. And I didn't get it at all. That was just totally went over my head.
I, too, never really read Hitman. I read a couple issues that crossed over into something. And, man, when I was reading Section 8, which for some reason they're renaming to All-Star Section 8, as if that changes anything, they've done a couple of things that I thought were gambles or risks or, you know, gee, let's pull out the green team and see what happens.
Yeah.
This, I am amazed that this got greenlit.
Yeah.
I am looking at this, and if it weren't for the fact that it's going to be a short-lived miniseries, and for the fact that it's part of the DCBS bundles, I would be dropping the book. I am just unimpressed. Or impressed, but very unfavorably. I think that's the way to put that one.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff in Batman, and also Batman Superman and stuff with the new Batman, I don't want to give away who it is or whatever, but there was something that they reveal about one of the established Batman supporting cast characters that I looked at, I read it, and I'm like, okay, they're clearly doing this. They're saying this is true about this character, and I'm like, I'm not seeing it. I think it's not only a blatant retcon and an insane one. It just boggles my mind. But again, they're telling good stories in Batman and those titles. It's just, I don't know that those are the stories that that I think they should be telling.
Mm-hmm.
So, mixed feelings on those. Again, they're doing good stuff, just I'm not sure why they chose to do that stuff. Anything else for that week, or move on?
No, I don't. Nothing else stood out for that week, no.
Okay, how about the week of the 17th?
Prez, I thought, was super fantastic.
Really?
I did not think I would like that. The solicit just screamed all ages kid title,
mm-hmm.
and it was not that at all. I really enjoyed it.
I thought the first issue put a very different spin on things than the 8 or 10 page preview.
Yeah,
and I thought the first issue did a better job setting up the character that will become the president. And I've always thought that the best person for the job is the one who doesn't want it. And they kind of go in not that direction, but a similar-ish one. Mm-hmm. That's one where I think it's a gamble that they did and has a good chance of paying off. I don't know if this is a mini-series or if it's ongoing.
I think it's a mini, but if
I think if it's a 12-issue mini, but I wouldn't be surprised if it continues past that.
Yeah, I hope it gets some traction, because I really... Well, based on that first issue. Like you said, it's easier to write a good first issue than it is subsequent issues. But it was good. I really liked it.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, we talked about Justice League of America number one.
Mm-hmm. So
that I don't think we need to talk about.
I thought Martian Manhunter was very odd, and I had trouble connecting with that one.
I liked it. I think it's a different take than they've done on the character before, but he's a character that's tough to get traction in the market with.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious if this one will click or not. But I thought it was good.
I liked Dr. Fate a little better than Martian Manhunter. I thought it was a more accessible take, and I liked that direction. It's that whole youthifying of these characters, just like Black Canary and Batgirl before it. You know, that just a much younger take on these characters, and I thought it worked for by and large.
With this one, we've got a whole new character as Dr. Fate. That helps a lot. And it's a much younger one, different approach, etc. So I like the direction they're going there. It's also Paul Levitt's on writing. So I respect him as a writer. Mm-hmm. I think he's done great stuff. But then, you know, I look at Black Canary, with her being something of a reluctant rock star who's only doing this work with the band to get the money to pay for, you know, her stuff to rebuild her life or whatever. I get the reluctant hero thing. The reluctant rock star thing I'm still having problems with.
Yeah, it's tough.
And the whole concept of Black Canary as a rock star and nobody seeming to really put two and two together doesn't make sense to me. It's another one that it's like, it seems like it's story-wise got a very heavy manga influence.
Yeah.
In terms of this is the kind of wacky, crazy sort of a thing you might find in a manga. And I mean no disrespect to manga or Black Canary or anything of the sort when I say that. It's just such a different take on the character than has ever been done that it's a little jarring and hard to compute for me. But it at least makes a little more sense than Doomed, featuring somebody that apparently is being confused with Doomsday, even though he looks nothing like Doomsday. And that seems to be a slow burn on the character's origin. The only thing I'm really liking about that one is how, at least in the sneak peek, they brought back the Alpha Centurion that we hadn't seen for quite some time. So there's that. I'm enjoying that.
Yeah, that one didn't really move the needle for me either. Nor did Robin, Son of Batman. That was okay, but not really.
I liked Robin, Son of Batman, and I liked how they're trying to go with like a redemption arc for the character. I think it's good for the character to get his own series, get a chance to shine, and the direction they're going, whether it works or not, don't know, but it's fun. I like it. Not saying it's brilliant, I'm not saying everyone should get it, but yeah. And then Secret Six came out, but actually, I don't think I've read that. I'm still a little behind, and I was bouncing around, and I think I missed
it.
It was
really good, but I had forgotten everything from the first two issues, but I really liked the third issue.
What about the rest of the stuff that came out this week of June 24th?
Let's see, Walking Dead was good.
Well, I was thinking the DC stuff.
Oh, DC stuff. Yeah, what is that? We Are Robin and Justice League 3000... One? Is that right?
Yeah, We Are Robin, they did a better job setting that up than I expected. And while it may well be the lowest selling Batman or Gotham City title initially, I think it's got a chance of being a little bit of a sleeper hit, potentially. It just comes down to how many people give it a shot and how many does it click with. And for me, it did better than I expected.
Yeah, I didn't read any of the other DCs, so... you'll have to take 2001 number one and Green Lantern and let me know.
I enjoyed 2001, but I enjoyed 3000 of Justice League. It's just continuing on with that. They added a new character or two. Green Lantern and Lost Army, I enjoyed that. They're going in a very different direction with all of the Green Lantern stuff, both in terms of the Green Lantern stuff proper and also Sinestro from the week of the 17th. The way they set stuff up, I'm a little curious how some of this is gonna play out long term. It seems to have been a bit of a scorched earth retooling of the Green Lantern stuff, more so than I think was warranted. But given how sales were, no doubt DC felt otherwise.
Oh, okay.
Big status quo shift for Aquaman. I was surprised by that. The Batgirl stuff, I'm enjoying. But it's one of those where, with this issue, I thought it was good. With the preview story they did, that just felt like they were doing a riff on Arcade, and I'm not sure if that's going to play out in the series itself. But it makes me wonder kind of how original some of this is, where they're going with some of this. I don't know. It's it's continuing on from where it was going before, and it was a good retooling of the character. It's just, it was a retooling.
Yeah.
Grayson, again, loving that. They've just been doing an awesome job on that title. And that's one that on paper, before it originally came out, I'm like, this just seems like a bad move, but they've really won me over. And it was one where I thought, not only was this a really good issue setting up his new status quo, but also the sneak peek one was just a fun done-in-one story. It had a couple of nice little Easter egg kind of continuity things that don't really matter, but was just, ooh, they're tying it in. Where this issue left off ties into some of the other stuff in the Batman books, and I'm curious where it goes. So I think...
How are you feeling about how DC's returning titles are doing with their long hiatus and coming back and picking up where they left off? You feel they're doing a good job?
Some of them very smoothly. Harley Quinn picked up without missing a beat. Other ones, Aquaman, Green Lantern, Batman, the Superman stuff, such a major status quo change for these characters. It's a bit jarring and a bit disappointing. It's like, oh,
I haven't read Grayson yet. I was wondering if Grayson, if I could, you know, if I had forgotten what was going on in Grayson, and or you even needed to remember what was in number 8.
They parked the title at a convenient spot.
Oh, okay.
So it's one of those that it's not like it ended on a cliffhanger and they're picking it back up or something. They reset the scene fairly effectively. So I think they're doing good stuff, but I think they're painting themselves into some corners if they're not careful. And, you know, I wonder how long it's going to be before they say, oh, this isn't working, let's do another couple of dozen new titles and retool Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, the mainstays yet again. So I'm a little disappointed with DC, and this all seems to be either more of the same or, wow, this is a really strange kind of a thing to do. Batmite, Bizarro, Section 8, stuff like that.
Well, I mean, they're not alone, because now Marvel is relaunching, what, 45 new titles? All new, all different?
Well, all new volumes, all different volumes. As to actually all new, all different, I don't know. They're saying that a lot, but, you know, we're getting another volume of Spider-Gwen, another volume of A-Force, we're going back to Invincible Iron Man. They're doing some good stuff, though, by and large. I think they've got a better energy level, a better sensibility. But some of the stuff I'm reading coming out of what they're going to do coming out of Secret Wars, it seems like it's very much their Crisis on Infinite Earths, except they're going whole hog, and we're going to have a much more of a mishmash afterwards. And I'm just unclear if it's we get characters from other worlds that are living on essentially the Secret Wars Marvel Universe, or if the backstory of the Marvel Universe is just fundamentally different. And I'm hoping it's just we've got a lot more characters having kind of arrived there or something, and that the backstory is not all up for grabs, because that's really what kind of disintegrated continuity over at DC in the 80s.
Did any of those titles intrigue you?
For the new stuff for Secret Wars?
The new Marvel number
the new Marvel, yeah, I mean, the Squadron Supreme stuff sounds interesting. Contest of Champions, yeah, don't know about that one. But, I mean, by and large, they're telling good stories.
Looks like we're going to get a Karnak, a Venom, Space Knight.
Those I hadn't seen. I haven't been keeping up on all the news. I'm, again, behind on my reading and even further behind on my reading on the web.
Yeah, it's almost like they said, oh, okay, DC, so you're launching 24 new number ones. Well, we'll do, you know, 50 or 60 new ones.
Yeah, I was hearing 55 or 60, and that's a staggering amount.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a interesting couple of months as the year continues, all this stuff comes out and things shake out. I mean, any new title has a couple of month honeymoon period, and then when both publishers are kind of, you know, throwing, you know, dozens of new titles against the wall to see what sticks, that's going to have some impact.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think 6 and 8 new titles a week is too many. You know, a couple. Just limit it to a couple new titles each week.
Yeah,
but seems like there's just way too many going on.
To do that, you need to have quite a few more titles sticking around.
That's true. Yeah, they have to get beyond 12.
Well, I mean, when you end certain volumes at 5 or 6 issues just to restart them with a new volume, I mean, TJ and I were talking about that on the trades episode. It's getting to where you can't have a volume 2 of a trade because the monthly series didn't last long enough. There's something just not quite right about that.
Yeah.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Yeah, that does it.
Cool.
Join us next week as we discuss Barbed Wire number 1 from Dark Horse, Will Eisner's The Spirit number 1 from Dynamite Entertainment, and We Stand on Guard number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.